Begin the current daf, Masechet Avodah Zarah, daf Mem Zayin. Begin 8 lines down from the top of the Yamad, where the Gemara continues in a related discussion from the previous daf. And that's what we were discussing regarding, in the previous Mishnayis, regarding Avodah Zarah, Kalat Slamim, when someone finds an image, if we know or assume it to be Avodah Zarah, then it's going to be forbidden to have benefit from it. But then we said an exception to that is something that's Mechubba Lekarka, something that's attached to the ground, where we say that when the Jewish people came to Eretz Yisrael, Eleheim al Haharim was forbidden, but the Harim, the mountains themselves, even the people worship it, does not become forbidden for benefit. Now, on that there was a discussion regarding, however, how that relates to Gevaya, to Hektish, and our Gemara continues on that theme. By Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish had the following question. Hamashtacha veledekel. Someone bows down, worships like a Avodah Zarah to a tree, so it bows down to a palm tree. What's the halacha regarding the lulav, the branches, which are used as a mitzvah on Sukkot? What's halacha? Is that permitted to have benefit from it to use it for the lulav? In other words, if you say, as we said on the previous daf, that there is neved b'mechubur etz l'gavaya, where although for a common, a headgear, a regular person, even if something is worshipped as Avodah Zarah, if it's attached to the ground, there's no problem. But we entertained in the previous daf that regarding Gevaya, regarding Hektish, it would be problematic. Here the question is, regarding the mitzvah of Lulav, what would the halacha be? As the Gemara explains, Be'ilon shenato mitchil lakach. Regarding a tree that was planted for the purpose of being an Ashera, an Avodah Zarah tree, loyti baylach. That for sure there's no question, because tafil lehedyid nami aser. That even for a commoner, everyone agrees, is going to be forbidden. It's considered as Avodah Zarah, and one cannot have benefit from it. Kiti baylach, the whole question would pertain, be'ilon shenato lubsaif avdai. A tree that was planted in general, and then later on, when it was grown, then they went and worshipped it. Now, moreover, qualifies the Gemara. Valibd Rabbi Yisrael Behuda loyti baylach. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who we mentioned in the previous daf, there's no question because tafil lehedi nami aser. He holds that even such a tree, which wasn't planted to be an Avodah Zarah, but later on was worshipped, does become aser. So, of course, even for a commoner, it's aser for sure to use as a divar mitzvah. Kiti baylach. When could you have the question? Alibd Rabbanon. According to Rabbanon, who disagreed with Rabbi Yisrael Behuda. Le'inyan mitzvah ma, regarding a mitzvah purpose, what's the halacha? What's the question? Mima'is klapi gevaya eloi. Is it considered repulsive and disgusting to use such a thing for a dvar mitzvah or not? That was the question of Rish Lakish. Now, however, Kiyasa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came, he actually said that the question of Rish Lakish was different. It was actually told by an Ashera tree, which was forbidden. According to whatever interpretation, whether it was planted like that or like Rabbi Yisrael Behuda, it became later on. But it's an Asherah tree, which is forbidden even for a commoner. Then Shebitla, but then it was nullified, as the Mishnah says in the next daf, Memches Min Aleph, where if let's say a tree was worshipped later on and there's the new growths that come after that, once it was starting to be worshipped, so the halach is Neitel Masha Hichlef. You have to take off what then regrew then. And that's considered, once that's taken off, a nullification. Now, it's regarding such a case that kamibayilei, that's the question. So now that it's nullified, now there's no more Avodah Zarah elements on this Ashera tree, it's not considered Ashera anymore, is it now considered fit for mitzvah purposes or not? What's that question? Explains the Gemara. Yesh dichu etzel mitzvahs. Do we say that the halacha of dchia, of rejection, applies in halachas of mitzvahs, and that we say, well, once it was rejected in the time, in the interim, when it was considered an Ashera tree, so it's going to be rejected forever. So although now there's no more Avodah Zarah element to it, but there was a time period that it was, so that's it, you can't use it for a mitzvah purpose, even though now it's not an Ashera anymore. Or do we say that, no, there's no concept of being rejected. When it was Avodah Zarah, then you couldn't. Now that it's no more Avodah Zarah, because it was Mevatel, then it is going to be permitted to use it as a lulav. Now, on this, if that's the question, according to this version of what Rish Lakish was asking, says the Gemara, Tifshet Le Meditnan. What do you mean? Why couldn't then Rish Lakish answer his question if this Dichay Etzel Mitzvahs or not, which is pertaining to this Lulav, which the Asher was Mevatel, they nullified it, and now the question is the rejection not? You can resolve it from the Mishnah Masechtas Chulin. Mishnah says, regarding the halacha of Kisur Hadam, there are certain types of, animals that have to have their blood covered, and after it's slaughtered, and there's fowl and wild animals. Now, says the Mishnah, Kisahu v'nizgala. Let's say somebody covered the blood, but then they got uncovered. The wind came and blew it away. So the halacha is patum l'chassas, he's exempt from covering it. He already fulfilled his mitzvah, although now the wind blew it away, that he's exempt. But let's say kiso haruach, let's say he never covered the blood. Actually, wind came and blew some dirt onto the blood, which had it covered. So the halacha is chayv l'chasas. So the individual who slaughtered the animal, he has to cover it. Now, v'amar Rabbi v'chanan Rabbi Yechon, he qualified that mishnah mesech the school, and he says, leishanu el shechazev nizgala. The obligation of the person of covering that blood, which he didn't, but rather the wind covered it, it's only if subsequently the wind came and then blew it away and had it uncovered. But if it didn't get uncovered, it's still covered, then he doesn't have an obligation of covering it because it's covered anyway. So that's how he qualified the halacha in the Mishnah Masechet Chul. Now, Vavinba, we had asked regarding the halacha, but kichazim in the skala may have, but then what's the difference, even if the wind came and blew it off now it's uncovered again, but what's the difference? Why should he now be obligated to cover it? But hoil v'itchi itchi, but once he was rejected from covering it, he's always rejected from it. Because when the moment when the wind came and blew and covered over the blood, at that point in time, he wasn't able to cover it anymore because it's anyways covered by itself. So as long as it's not uncovered, he's exempt from covering it. So then he's already rejected from covering it. So even if it gets uncovered again, he should not be obligated in covering it. Oh, so regarding that question, what's called a shpar, Vam Rapapa said, Zayse Meris. So this tells us, in Duchay Etzel Mitzvahs, must be that there's no halach of rejection by mitzvahs, where although there was a time that he couldn't cover it because it was covered anyway, when it gets uncovered, then this old obligation, which he never fulfilled, comes back again. So you see, says the Gemara, that there is no Dichei Etzel Mitzvahs. And therefore that should answer Rish Lakish's question, that of course you could use this lulav for Dvar Mitzvah, because right now it's not an Asher anymore, and there's no Dichei Etzel Mitzvahs. Says the Gemara, Rav Papa Gufa Iboile. Rav Papa's halacha itself was what was part of his question. What does that mean? Mifshad Pshita Leila Rav Papa, was it obvious? Did Rav Papa resolve the question? Dein Dichei Etzel Mitzvahs, that yeah, he said conclusively that there's no rejection by mitzvahs. And therefore, loishna lekula, there wouldn't be any difference if that would come out to be a leniency. For example, like over here by the Asherah tree, which was batal, where that then would go ahead and permit the lulav to be used for the mitzvah on Sukkos. But loishna lechumra, and neither would it be difference if it comes out as a stringency, like in that case where he was discussing regarding kisui of covering the blood, where now that creates a stringency that now he's obligated to go ahead and cover it, even though it was already at one point that he couldn't cover it. Or maybe svukim misafkele. Maybe Rav Papa was in doubt. He wasn't clear if you say dicha b'mitzvahs or not. And therefore, ulechumra minan, maybe only as a stringency you say that there's no dichui. So therefore, regarding covering the blood, he says, we don't know, so we're going to obligate you to cover it. But lekula, regarding a leniency, like in this case, loyam rinan, maybe we don't say that there's no, maybe we don't say that there's no dichui to then permit the luluf to be used as a dvar mitzvah. And therefore, take good, let it stand. It's not clear. That was his question according to the second version, which you cannot resolve from the Mishnah Masechta Chul in the way Rav Papa explained it, because that was only possibly as a stringency. But as in our case, regarding a leniency, who said that he was conclusive about that, and therefore, that question was not answered. Continues the Gemara in a similar type of questioning. But Rav Papa says, a mishtach avela behem, if someone bows down to an animal, worships it like a avodah zarah. So tzamra maulat chelas. What's the halacha regarding its wool to be used for tchelis, which is they take the blood of the chilazon, which is some type of bluish color, and they dye the wool to use for sanctified purposes. So the Gemara asks regarding this question, tchelis demai, tchelis for what halachic purpose? It tchelis lekahanim, if it's talking about the tchelis, the blue wool that was used by the kahanim in their kahanic garments, which was for the utility of you doing the avodah with it. And the question is, do we say that machshirei karban, which the garments are not an actual sacrifice itself, it's preparatory, it's something that's secondary to the karban. And the question is that considered like the karban itself or not? And then the question is, and even if we consider it like the karban, and which would thus be usur, like we said, nevad would be usur regarding the karban itself, and we're saying that the machshirei karban is like a karban itself, but then there's another question related to it. But maybe when the wool gets changed, when it gets dyed, so that's what's called shinoi benevad. There's a deviation, there's a change over here by this which was worse as avodah zarah, which would permit it to be used for gevaya for hekdesh type of purposes or not. If that's his question of Rav Papa, well then ask the Gemara Hayne Boye de Rambam Bachama. Well, this is exactly the question we had on the previous daf on Daf Mem Vav, which was Rambam Bachama's question, which had these two questions regarding taking the stones from the mountain, which was worshipped for the Mizbeach, which was A, first of all, it's Neved of Mechubur, and something which is not aser, but maybe for gevoy it is. And moreover, but maybe when you go ahead and you change it, so maybe that's going to be make it permitted for the mizbeach. So that question was already asked. And moreover, and that was the question that we had regarding the kama, which was Rambam's question. He had hamishtach v'le kama schitim. Someone bows down to the chitim. Had those two elements of that same question over there. Now, and v'itchelis letzitzis. And if his question was not regarding the tchelis of the big dekehanim, but rather his question was regarding a regular person who wears tzitzis, which the primary halacha and in Talmudic times when they had the chilazin, they had a string of blue wool. So his question was, well, since it's a mitzvah purpose, do we say that it's repulsive when it was worshipped and it's going to be forbidden, like regards to gevayah for hektish purposes, or not? If that's his question, hainde bayid Rish Lakish. Well, then that's Rish Lakish's question we just mentioned before regarding the lulav. So what's the novelty of a Rapapa's question when we already discussed whether it's for bigde kuhuna, so it's regarding gevayah, and meaning, do we say makshir carbon is like carbon, and moreover, when it goes through a change, is that going to be permitted or not, like regarding bowing down to the kamas chitim? Or if it's regarding tzitzis, well, that's Rish Lakish's question regarding the lulav. So the Gemara says, you're right, in the chanami. It's correct. She didn't have to ask the question because that's already included in whatever questions we had before. So why did he ask the question regarding using the wool for the tchelis? That's because there are other things that he had, which was a list of 2-3 questions, which those were not asked before, which are unique in its question, and therefore he included in that. But it's all related to when someone bowed down and worshipped an animal as avodah zarah. His first question, yeah, which was already included in the previous questions, was Samar Ma'al Tcheles. What's the halacha can use its wool for Tcheles? But then he had more questions related to that. Karnahu Ma'al Chatzaitzis. Can use the horn of this animal for trumpets, which was used in playing the song when they would bring a carbon, which the Gemara in Masech Tesukah and Perak Chalil says that the shir, the song, is Ma'akav as a carbon. That's a necessity when you bring a carbon. Shakeho Ma'al Chalil. And his question was, well, using the thighs of the animal, can you use it to create flutes? B'nei me'eho ma'al l'faris. What's with can use its intestines for the strings of the harp? What's the question? So the Gemara explains. Aliba de mandame ikashir b'kli. According to the pin that holds that the primary shira that they would sing and play by the mizbeach when they brought a carbon was with the instruments, which this machlik is in Perek Soka Dafnun Mabez. So then the one who holds the primary was the instruments, like the bailach. Then of course no question. The vadi asr, it's most definitely going to be asr, like the Ran explains, because it's machshirei carbon, and therefore that's going to be aser. Ki tibaylach, the whole question that you would have would be aliba demandam eikar shir bepeh, according to the one who holds the primary mitzvah of shiras with their voices, and therefore the instruments were only basume kala ba'almuhu, and they were only there to assist and to embellish the voices, but the primary was the voices, and the instruments were just assisting, and therefore umay sinan, therefore we could bring from these from this animal that was worshipped to take part of its pieces of the animal and to make the instruments out of them. Maybe no, that still it's going to be prohibited because it's still repulsive. And therefore, the question is unique. And that is, even if you say that regarding a palm tree, that the lulav would be permitted to use for the mitzvah of lulav, here, since it's for the tzarech of a carbon of gevaya, which is a more elevated status, maybe that's more repulsive and therefore maybe it would be asr. Take a let it stand. That question was unique. These other parts, yeah, Tzamer Mal Tcheles is included, but these other questions related to the animal that was worshipped, that's a unique question which is not answered. Continuing on a similar type of a question, Rabbi asks, Hamashtachav Lamayan, if someone bows down to a spring, which does not become forbidden for a commoner because it's attached to the ground. Meim of Maul in the Sachem, but what's the halacha regarding using that water for the water libations that were poured on the Mizbeach on Sukkos? Says the Gemara, Maikam Ebayle, what's the question? Ilem lebevuah, if it's regarding that, what's his intention when he's bowing down to the water? In other words, is this the question? Is he bowing down to his own image that he sees in the water? That's what kasagit, that's what he's bowing down to. Idim lemaya kasagit, or maybe, and this is the other side of the question, is he bowing down to the water? So the water, it will be forbidden. And that says the Gemara, if that's the question, then Then why was it asked in such a way? It should have been asked regarding a bucket and even pertaining to a regular person. Meaning, from the fact that the questioner asked it specifically regarding a spring of water which is attached to the ground and it was specifically to Gvaya, could it be used as Nesachim? The inference is that it was obvious to the questioner that if the water was detached, then it would be usr even to a commoner. But then the question is, but the way we just described the question, that question should have pertained even to detached water. It has nothing to do with that it's attached versus detached and gevoya versus hedid. The question should be, was he bowing down to his own image, and therefore the water would not be problematic, or was he bowing down to the water, and therefore the water does become usr? So says the Gemara, no, la'ilam l'mayika sagit. Now, truthfully, it's obvious that he's bowing down to the water. So, here's the question was, was he bowing down to the water that's in front of him? In other words, the water that he sees in front of him right now, that's what he's bowing down to. But that water ends up going away. The way that a spring works is that as long as it flows, the water that's there continuously moves away and other water come in place of it. So therefore, when he finally comes to draw water, that water should be permitted. Or maybe that, no, it's regarding the flow of the entire river. That's what kasaga, that's what he's bowing down to. And therefore he's making the entire river as something that he worships. And if you say that there's never been mechubur, as we said, ligvaya, then it's going to be asr. And that was the question. And that says the Gemara Umi Mitzri, but would that even be forbidden? But he says, public water, a person cannot make forbidden by bowing down to. So what's the question at all? Even if you say there is a isr of never ligvaya, but what would the question be? Meaning, we're saying, if you say, yesh nevel gevaya, so that's the question, is he bowing down to the water in front of him? But then that ends up going away, so then you could take. But if he says the whole stream, then become usr, but you can't make public waters forbidden. So the Gemara Leitzricha, no, it's necessary in the case the nevi me'ara, where it's flowing from his own water, from his own land. So it is privately owned, and therefore he could make it usr. So if you say there is nevel gevaya, then it would be problematic if he's bowing down to the entire stream. But if he's bowing down only to the water in front of him, then the rest of the water stream would be permitted. That was the question that was asked. Continues the Gemara with the next Mishnah. Relating to these halachas of the prohibition of benefiting from Avodah Zarah. Says the Mishnah, Misha yebeisli samach l'avodas kechavim. Someone's house was near a house of idol worship, where the house itself was worshipped. So it's considered as the Avodah Zarah itself, where the wall that was by his wall, neighboring the house of idol worship, was owned by the house of idol worship. V'nafal, and then the wall collapses. So the halacha is asal of naisa. So he's forbidden to build the wall, because then he's building a wall for the house of idol worship. So Ketze Yasso, how should he do this? Kainis b'teich shaloi arba amas ubainis. He has to go within an area of 4 amas into his own property line, and then build it over there. So that's considered not within, because dalet amas is always considered within the area, the perimeter of an object of a person. Here you dalet amas away, so the wall that you're making is not considered making a wall for the Avodah Zarah. But let's say shaloi b'shal avodas kechavim. Let's say the wall, the thickness of the wall is actually shared by both properties. It's half his wall and half the house of idol worship. So the Mishnah continues on the base, then nidin mechza mechza. Then it's actually qualified half and half. In other words, it's the half of the house of idol worship that does not get included in the area of him going within dalet amas, but his part does get included. So if let's say the thickness of the wall was 2 amas, so he counts that amma as in his domain, and then he only has to add on another 3 amas that he goes into his domain, because that's a total of 4 amas in his property line. Continues the Mishnah, avonav eitzav vafari, the bricks, the wood, the dirt of that wall, which collapsed, mitamin kesheretz, transmits tuma to an individual like touching a sheretz, even if it's actually from the wall of his part, because as Rashi explains, this halacha concept of im brera, there's no way of qualifying what's from his half and what's from the house of idol worship's half. And therefore, if someone touches those bricks and that wood and all the different parts of that debris, it's going to transmit tuma to him like as if he touched a dead sheretz, which transmits tuma through maga by touching, but it does not transmit tuma through masa, through carrying. Which, if let's say someone's not touching it when he's carrying. Now, how do you know that it transmits tuma like as if he touched a dead sheretz? And then, like it says the pasuk in Devarim, which is in Perek Zayin Pasuk Chavav, it says, "Don't bring an abomination which refers to Avodah Zarah el beisecha to your house, and it should be like cheim kamayu, something that's set apart, that's despicable." And the pasuk continues, "Shakitz teshakzenu," that it should be repulsive, which is a terminology that's used by shrutzim. So you see, it has aloha like a sheretz. Now, Rabbi Kiva, he says actually kenida. the pieces of the Avodah Zarah, in this case, the wall of the house of idol worship, which was worshipped, has halacha like a menstruating woman, which has a more severe level of tamash. Like it says the pasuk in Yeshaya, which is in the context of talking about Avodah Zarah, it says, Tizrim kemaydava, you should disperse them like menstruation. Say tarmalay, tell them to go out, which it's comparing Avodah Zarah to a nida. Ma nida metama b'masa, just like a menstruating woman transmits tumah when it's carried, which actually the case that Rashi describes is from a pasuk b'chol negeya b'chol kli ashtesh alav, wherever touches any vessel which the nida sat on, which the inference is that obviously whatever vessel she sits on, it gives tumah to the thing that's carrying her, even though she doesn't touch that item, even if it's, let's say, 10 mattresses, one on top of the other, even the bottom one becomes tumah because it's carrying her, which the Bach points out, that Rashi Masech the Shabbos actually gives a different example, because the example Rashi is giving is actually tumas midras. Rashi Masech the Shabbos actually gives the halachic concept of tumas masa, which is that if a person carries her, which is similar to Azav, as the Pasuk equates of Hidvim and Nidasa, Behizav and Zayvai, where Azav we know transmits Tumah if someone carries him, as it says in the Pasuk, Bechol Negeya, Bechol Ashiya, Tacht of Yitma, the Arab, and Vahanoisiyasim, so it sounds like whoever carries him too. So that applies to Azav, and therefore the same thing that the Pasuk equates would be to Anida, which he says, Tzarachim, why Rashi gives a case of Midras, but the Halach of Nida is more severe in that if someone carries her, it will transmit Tumah to the person who's carrying her. Avavadzikachav, Metam and Masa, so too, the Avaydazara, which in this case is the house of the wall, the wall of the house which was worshipped, is also considered Avodah Zarah. If anyone even just carries it without even touching it, it would also transmit Tumah. Now the Gemara asks, regarding the opening halacha of a Mishnah, where if the wall collapses, he's not able to build the wall right there, because then he's actually providing a wall for Avodah Zarah. He has to go within to his property line, Dalet Amos. So the Gemara says, but v'kamar v'chlavetz kechavim. But he's giving them a different benefit because he's giving them an expansive area for them to utilize, because now he's cutting his property line, Dalet Amos, in. How are you allowed to benefit Avodah Zarah? So Amar B'chinin Mesura, he says, the Avala Besa Kisei. He doesn't give them that Dalet Amos as he's going into his property line, they expand. He actually makes that area where he defecates over there, he makes it into a lavatory. That is the Gemara. Okay, but v'habay tzniusa. But you need to have modesty. Mishnah taught us that you're not allowed to build a wall to separate between him and the Avodah Zarah within that Dalet Amos, because then you're building for Avodah Zarah. So the problem is, so it's going to be open area. And when someone relieves themselves, they need to have modesty, and this is out in the open. So the Gemara, David Le Besa Kisa De Leila, you're right, he's not going to make a daytime bathroom. It's going to be one only for the nighttime when it's dark. Well, that is the Gemara, but the master had said, Ezuhi Tsunua, who's considered a modest person? Someone who relieves himself at nighttime, the same as he does during the daytime, which means he needs modesty, especially in Talmudic times. He didn't have restrooms as we have, where people would relieve themselves somewhere on the side. Now, in the daytime, you have to go somewhere on the side so people don't see, but at nighttime, no one can see anywhere. You can do it out in the street. A modest person, which a person is obligated to be like, should relieve themselves at nighttime in the same place where they would relieve themselves during the daytime. Now, explains the Gemara further. Although the Gemara in Masechtas Brachas of Samach Beis Amud Aleph explains that don't say bimakim in the same place, meaning that you have to distance yourself at nighttime just like you would in daytime, where at daytime you have to go really far out into the forest because the people can't see. Nighttime, you don't have to go that far, but rather say bikaderech in the same manner, meaning just like in the same manner that a person relieves themselves during the daytime, which means to say that when he relieves himself, he's sitting. And also a certain measurement that he uncovers himself depending what type of relieving he is, whether it be a tefach or two tefachim. Now, so although you don't have to go that far at nighttime, but miyutz niyus abayilim eved, however, you still have to have a certain amount of modesty at nighttime, which therefore there's still the halacha of tzniyus then too. And the problem is here there's not going to be any modesty at all, because everyone in that house of idol worship is going to be seeing this guy relieving himself because he can't make a wall. So how could you make a bathroom over there? Says the Gemara, either the Avad Leila Tanaikis, he's going to make it for children, where that's not a problem, or Inami, or also the Gadol Behizami Behingi, no, he will make some type of an obstruction of vision by putting up some type of thorns and thistles, but that's not going to be a wall, so he's not going to be helping the house of idol worship, but it's still going to make an obstruction that they won't see him, and there will be modesty when they use that area of the Dalet Amos as a restroom. Continues the halacha of the next Mishnah, which relates to this halacha of the previous Mishnah regarding the prohibition of a house of idol worship, says the Mishnah Shleisha Batmehen. There's actually three different types of houses which relate to the halacha of nullifying the house in the context of Avodah Zarah, which we said that something that's Avodah Zarah is forbidden to have benefit or to benefit the Avodah Zarah. when you're nullified, when you mevatel avodah zarah, then it's permitted to use it. So there's actually three different types of categories. So the Mishnah explains, category number one is bayis shebanu mitzchil avodah zarah, a house that was built initially for idol worship purposes, where they go to worship the house itself, which was the halacha of the previous Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, reza aser. So that house is entirely considered as avodah zarah, and it's forbidden to have any benefit from it. Now, the halachic relevancy is that if a non-Jew built it, so it's going to be aser until he's mevatlet, where if, let's say, he breaks off a piece of it, that's already mevatlet, that's going to permit it. In contrast, as we mentioned other times, if a Jew makes an avodah zarah, then it's going to be aser forever, all in the bricks, and the wood, and the dirt, everything's going to be aser forever. There's no bittel by an avodah zarah that a Jew made. Category number two. Sidoi v'kidoi l'avodis kechavim. He plastered it or he engraved it for the purposes of avodah zarah, meaning this house was a regular house meant for dwelling purposes. Then they went and they designated to be used for avodah zarah, and then they went and they did a renovation job, they plastered it, and they made some type of pictures on the walls for avodah zarah purposes, and the chiddush, and they made added new additions to the house. So then the halacha is, if a Jew wants to come and nullify it so he can go ahead and use this property, he boarded off the house of idol worship. So neitel mashachidish. What he has to do is he has to take away all the renovations and additions that they made, and then the house is going to be permitted, because although he was not mevatel avodah zarah, or even if actually it was made by a renegade Jew, who his avodah zarah is never batel, here it's going to be batel, because the only thing that became prohibited in this house was the additions, and that addition, it was nullified, meaning when you take it off, that addition is forbidden, that you have to throw away in the garbage, but the house itself was never worshipped. As the Gemara explains, that house was not worshipped, because if it was worshipped by an idol worshipper, then the whole house would become aser, and the non-Jew would have to be mevatlet. And actually, if a Jew worshipped it, then it would be aser forever. So the house was never worshipped, but there were these additions that you just get rid of the additions, and then the house is permitted. Category number three is hichnes l'teicha avodis kechavim, that actually the house itself was never intended to be worshipped. And they never set it aside for the purposes of idol worship. Rather, just temporarily, momentarily, they went and they brought in an avodah zarah into that house, vayitziyuhu, and then they took it out, harizamutu, so the house is permitted, you don't even need to do anything. Now, relating to the halacha of a Mishnah, Amar Rav. Rav says, ha-mishtachavit labayis asra. If someone bows down to a house, he worships it, the house becomes asra. On that is the Gemara, al-maksavar talush b'sayv chibroi. So obviously we see that Rav holds that something that was detached, which are the bricks and the wood and all the other parts of the house, then ultimately it was attached, which that's what the bricks of the house are detached, and then they're built and they get attached to the ground, that ketolish tami, that he considers it like as if it's something that's a detached item. Because if it's attached, we know something that's mechubla karka, like a mountain, is not awesome. If he's saying that someone who owns a house and bows down to it can make it forbidden, obviously he considers it as detached. And that is the Gemara, but vanan benoitnan. But our mission makes it sound like that it's only regarding the bricks of a house. When does it become aser? Only if you built it to be a house that's going to be worshipped. In contrast, Rav was saying that if it wasn't built for that and you just bowed down, how can you say that's aser? Says the Gemara, because actually both halachas are true. Banoi afa pishuli hishtachav alai. The halacha of our mission was talking about if you built the house to be as an avodah zarah, even if it was not bowed down to, which Rashi points out, obviously that means the town of our Mishnah holds, which is a machlokes, that an avodah zarah becomes forbidden right away, even if it wasn't served yet. And hishtach v'afapesh lebane. And Rav was saying a different halacha, that if you bow down to a house, even if it wasn't built for that purpose, that it will also become aser. So then that's the Gemara. Ihach, if that's the case, that Rav's adding on another case, hani shleish, then why does the Mishnah say there's three types of houses are baha, but there's a fourth one? Not when it was built for that, not when it was added on, not when you just put an avodah zarah, but actually that it wasn't any of those, but rather it was bowed down to sometime when it was up. Says the Gemara, but kivin delin bittul, since regarding the halacha that the Mishnah is primarily coming to teach, which is regarding the laws of bittul, which they're all different, the first case needs bittul, the second one just take away the renovations, the third one doesn't need anything at all. Regarding that, whether it was built to be an avodah zarah but wasn't worshipped, or it was not built for that but it was worshipped, they're all considered one, because whether it was built or bowed down to, the whole entire house becomes aser. And that is, if it was done by a non-Jew, the non-Jew has to be batlet. And if it was done by a Jew, there's no bittel forever. So it's the same thing, therefore it didn't have to add it as a fourth category. The Gemara continues with the next Mishnah. Similar type of a categorization is Sholesh Avanim Hein. There's three types of stones regarding the laws of being mevatel avodah zarah. First category is Evan Shechatzava, a stone that was quarried from the mountain, mitchilo, initially for the intention, lebimus, to be a platform to contain the idol, the Avodah Zarah, where you put the image on top of it, and they would worship so the platform too, like the Avodah Zarah itself. Says the Mishnah, harizu asur. So therefore here, that stone is going to be forbidden, even if you never yet put the image of the Avodah Zarah on that stone, which was supposed to be the platform. Now, therefore, again, as we said, the ramification is if a non-Jew quarried it, then the non-Jew has to be mevatlet, and he has to diminish it a little bit until it's dented, and then it's going to be permitted. But if a Jew quarried it for the purposes of putting an Avodah Zarah on it, then it's going to be asur forever, because there's no bittel of an Avodah Zarah that a Jew made. Category number two. Let's say this rock was quarried for some random purposes, secular purposes. Then they went, they plastered it, and they engraved it for the purposes of being used as an Avodah Zarah. So then, similar to the previous Mishnah, category number two is Neitel. Then the Jew takes off whatever was added on by the non-Jew, which was Mashasayid, Bekayid, what he plastered and what he engraved, and he throws that to the wind. And then the Mutaris. And then, meaning then the stone is going to be permitted because the stone was not made to be Avodah Zarah, rather the additions was what the Avodah Zarah was. Category number three, Hemet Alavodis Kechavim. Let's say the stone was never quarried or designated to be a platform for Avodah Zarah. Rather, temporarily, they put an Avodah Zarah on top of that stone, and then the silka, they removed it. So then Harizu Mataris, so then that stone is going to be permitted, and it doesn't require any bittel at all. Now, Amr Reb Ami, he qualifies the middle of the three halachas. He says, this that we said, that when they plaster or they engrave the stone, that you have to just throw away that part. So Reb Ami says, V'ushasayid v'kayid b'gufishal evan. That's talking about where they plastered and engraved it with iron into the image, into the stone itself. But if, let's say, they plastered or engraved on top of it, let's say they in the plaster is where they engraved, but nothing was done into the stone itself, then says Reb Ami, then actually that stone would be permitted without any bittel whatsoever, without even getting rid of anything, since they never made the stone itself into an Avodah Zarah. Now that has to get more, but v'dumi debay is not. Our Mishnah parallels exactly the previous Mishnah regarding that of making a house into a house of worship. Now, Ubayi is regarding the middle case of the house, regarding plastering and engraving it, lav begufehu. That's not done carving into the walls itself. Rather, it's on the plastering on top of the wall. And still we see in the Mishnah Umitzu that it does become forbidden. It doesn't have to be in the object itself. So the Gemara, no, Bayis Nami, Ikebeni Urvi. No, regarding the previous mission of the house too, there it's also that the plaster and the engravings are in between the bricks. It's in the wall itself. And that's why it's awesome. But you're right, if it was on top, then you wouldn't have to do anything. It would not become forbidden because it's not in the object itself. But that is the Gemara. But the Mishnah says, without specification, that if it was plastered or engraved. And therefore the Gemara asks, Milo Yaskinan, from the fact that it doesn't specify, isn't the Mishnah talking about even if it was Deshaye, Vahadur Shaye, that it was plastered and then plastered again? In other words, if it was initially plastered before the plaster of the Isser, and then only afterwards did they put on a new layer of plaster for the purposes of Avodah Zarah, and still the Mishnah tells you have to take off that layer of plaster, which sounds like that it's not enough to permit the house or the rock, the stone, without taking off what was added, even though it's not in the wall itself. So that refutes the qualification of Reb Ami. So rather, the Gemara says, no, ki itmer the Reb Ami, to the contrary, what Reb Ami was saying was le'inyan bitl itmer, was regarding the laws of nullification, not regarding the inception of the Isser. To say, as we had thought, that the Isser is only going to be if you plaster into the rock or into the wall itself. No, you're right, as the Gemara is pointing out, even if it's not done in the object itself, it's only on top of the object, that addition would be forbidden. But Reb Ami is going into laws of bittel, and this is what he was saying. The avagav decide v'kayid b'guvish 11, to the contrary, as a leniency. That even if the plastering and the engraving was in the rock itself, it's still, the halacha of the Mishnah is still going to be enough in the way it qualified that what's going to be the bittel for that type of a stone. That is kinot l'mashachidish, when you take away what was added, shapardam, it's going to be good, and you don't have to do a bittel on the actual object itself as Avodah Zarah. What's the chiddush in that? Because the Ma'ad HaTema, what would you say, kiven shesayid v'kayid b'guvish 11, but since the plastering and the engraving was in the stone itself, I would think to say that that's comparable to like a rock that was quarried. It's in the rock itself. That like when it was quarried, where the whole thing becomes us as Avodah Zarah. And therefore, v'titzakula, all of it should become prohibited, and you should require that the non-Jew should be mevatel the entirety of the house or of the stone, or let's say if it was done by a Jew, then it should be forbidden forever and not enough just to take over the addition. That's what Rabbami is teaching from the law of the Mishnah, that no, the designation of the title of Avodah Zarah is only on the addition, even if it was done into the wall itself or into the stone itself. Still, the stone itself was not quarried for that purpose, and therefore the stone is permitted. It's not considered Avodah Zarah. You take up the addition, it's going to be permitted.